is the New York State AFERD podcast entitled A through Z Health and PE. We are your co-hosts, Drs. C and C, the true Pan-American connection. I am Clancy Seymour, and my tag team partner is the one and only Dr. Victor Ramsey.
Details highlighting our episodes, guests, contact information, publications, and other useful resources will always be included in the podcast show notes. For more information about New York State AFERD, please visit newyorkstateaferd.org or Facebook and social media handles at New York State AFERD. Let's embrace the journey, and now, on to our show.
Greetings, listeners. I'm Dr. Clancy Seymour with my co-host, Dr. Victor Ramsey. Doc, how are you, my friend?
I am well. I am healthy. I am strong. I am excited. Am I motivated? And always happy to join you.
This is a Pan-American connection. Indeed. And this Pan-American connection extends from Western New York, Buffalo, New York, all the way to New York City and all parts in between. So what's the weather like in New York City?
Well, right now it's in the 60s, getting a little cooler down here. You know, I got so used to the summer with my running and enjoying the outdoors. But after this hawk starts to fall upon us, I sort of like hibernate a little bit. But
yep, the weather is changing indeed. Yes.
I'm having a ball.
Colors. Oh, but certainly a beautiful time of the year, nevertheless. And the weather's changing, and we now don't have to rely as much on air conditioning for those that benefit from that. And we can open the window for the world, the Earth's air conditioning, the natural air conditioning, right?
Sure.
So welcome to episode 9 of the New York State AFERD A through Z Health and PE podcast. And today is the first of 3 shows where we invite current undergraduate and graduate teacher candidates in physical and health education at Canisius College, who are completing their final semester of student teaching this fall. Mentor teachers were also invited to join the show by their teacher candidates and will be introduced accordingly if applicable. All guests have been asked to review relevant journal articles ahead of time to help with the discussion. Today, we'll be chatting about the article entitled, What is the New Normal in Physical Education Post-COVID-19? From the Journal of Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance, otherwise known as JOPERD. The focus of today's episode is to discuss the return to school for the fall and the successes and challenges we still face in the physical education profession amid the pandemic. And, you know, for that matter, not necessarily just physical education, right? Health education and other disciplines within the classrooms of the school sphere as well. So, folks, having read the article and now completed nearly 2 weeks of student teaching, you are on the docket. So let's share your thoughts. But to help listeners, you may also want to mention what perspective you're speaking from. Are you, for example, you're a teacher candidate completing student teaching, or you're a mentor teacher if applicable, or a university supervisor if applicable. So with that, let's get started.
Sure. So how's student teacher going so far, student teaching? And would you like to share a story with our audience? Anyone?
Oh, my name is Luke Federici. I'm a teaching candidate, and I am at Maryvale Intermediate. So that's grades 3 through 5. As weird as it sounds, like the new normal is kind of just like nothing's really seemed to change. Everything kind of picked off from where last year left off as far as the guidelines and what we're experiencing in our school. In our gym, every student has a dot that they have to sit on that's 6 feet apart. When everyone's doing that, we can take a mask break. I guess really the only thing that's different is we're spending a little bit more time trying to figure out how we can use certain equipment in a manner that is conducive to everything going on. I know for like our warm-up games to get the kids moving, we use pool noodles to play like different tag games. And then after that, or at the end of class, we'll spray them down and kind of sanitize them. I know next week we're starting to get into we're going to start a throwing and catching unit. So we'll get a little bit more equipment going in with that. So we'll kind of have to see how that plays out. But as weird as it is, like the new normal is kind of just like It's just like the normal now. It's not really new.
Right. So let me expand a little bit on that question. So obviously, big push for social emotional learning and all these type of opportunities for our students returning. What's the attitude of your students so far? I mean, are they happy to see their friends? Are they what's their attitude like?
So for the most part, all the kids are pretty happy. They're all happy to be back. I know like the first week wasn't that great just because it was doing like fire drill, lockdown procedures, attendance. And now we have to do seating charts just for contract tracing. But I would say probably like 90, 95% of the students are super happy. They're back with their friends 5 days a week. They're actually in school. And they're kind of, as weird as it is, like they're actually kind of happy that they actually have some responsibility of showing up every day and having to do work instead of just logging on the computer for like an hour or two maybe, and then they'll go play or do whatever with outside or play video games or whatever. So it's actually kind of nice that kids are like ready to go.
Right. Wow. Thank you. And just know, Luke, that your role there, it's vital, it's important. So I thank you on behalf of current and future professionals in the field. So thank you.
Thanks, Vic.
Anyone else?
One quick point, Luke. Luke is student teaching at Maryville, he mentioned, which is probably best characterized as a first ring suburban school. So you have Buffalo, and then Maryville is probably the first ring of suburb school districts outside of BPS, Buffalo, or Buffalo Public Schools. So something good for our listeners to have some context.
Awesome. Yeah. Anyone else would like to share a story or your return to school?
Yes.
All
right. Hey, everyone. My name is Sam Schultz, and I am student teaching at West Seneca East High School. That's also like a suburban area, just like where Luke is at. Except I'm 9th through 12th grade. So student teaching has been great so far. I felt really bad for the students on the first week just because everybody was excited to come back and play and be with all of their buddies. But for the whole first week, which was the 7th, so like Tuesday through Friday, they had to get their photos for their ID. So they didn't really get to do anything for about 30 minutes. So we have 80-minute blocks for our phys ed. And so for about the first 30 minutes, students weren't really able to do anything except sit and wait to get their photos taken. And then they were like, ooh, can we go outside? Ooh, can we do this? And it was just like exciting for me because last year, just having like 5 students in person at a time to like about 70 at a time, because we have 4 phys ed teachers and then plus me, so 5. So there's usually about 3 teachers teaching at once. And it was just exciting to go from this small group to this large group. And we have a really nice track and field facility, like with the football and lacrosse and soccer. They all utilize the field facility. So we've been taking them outside, weather permitting, which there was only like 1 or 2 days where the weather was a little gloomy, but it was so neat to see how the students were like, oh, I don't care if it's raining. I just want to go outside. Because so for us, like some of the guidelines for our school is so while they're inside the building, they have to keep their mask on, unless like in order to do the mask break, you have to be at least 3 feet apart. And then the teacher has to, you know, let everybody know, hey, we're staying socially distanced. Now we're allowed to take our mask off for like a 5-minute mask break. But pretty much what we have going on right now is we've told our students that as long as weather's permitting, all of our lessons are going to be focused outdoors. That way we can go outside, be socially distanced, and not have to wear the mask, which I love, because all of these students, they're just like, you know, they don't want to wear their mask. They keep it under their nose or they keep it under their mouth. And they're just like chatting with their friends. And we're like, we know you guys don't want to wear your masks, but you know, everybody has to for the safety of yourself and each other. So it's been just like super awesome to be able to go outside every day. I literally got sunburnt last week because of just being outside like all day, but it's been awesome so far, and I think we're going to be doing the mile soon. So I'm excited to see how that's going to be going since we're not allowed to use the locker rooms right now. So the students are like, well, are we allowed to change? And so basically, like, one of the rules we have set in place is you have to bring sneakers for your phys ed class because it's a 4-day block schedule. So it's a rotation. So they have phys ed one to two times, or yeah, twice a week. So basically the rule is you always need to have your sneakers so you can participate. But if you would like to bring a change of clothes, you're allowed to change. We're just not really supposed to let anybody go in the locker rooms right now. But yeah, besides that, it's going great so far. Sorry for chatting.
No. That's how we want to hear from you. We want to hear because it's important. You said something that is vital also, which was the notion of being patient, because obviously they want to get things done. And you alluded to it by saying, oh, can we go outside? And on the normal circumstances, you would have had that, you know, have them doing something right away. But, you know, unfortunately, we have to go with a different pace. So this is another layer of teaching here, teaching a little bit of patience, you know, that it's going to happen or could happen. Just be cautious of that. And that's great that you are. But you did share that it's going awesome. And that's key to hear. That's wonderful to hear. Thank you so much for sharing, Sam. Can we get at least one more story?
And real quick, Vic, yeah. If I could add to this, to continue to give our listeners some context. So I mentioned that Luke was student teaching in Maryvale, which is a first ring. And if you recall our podcast, I'll plug to one of our podcasts earlier in the summer, where we talked about your article about urban intensive versus urban characteristics and urban emergent, right? Characteristics. I think we would characterize Maryvale, where Luke and Riley, one of our other guests today, that would be very close to perhaps urban characteristics, first ring urban characteristics, but first ring in terms of a suburb comparatively to Buffalo, which is certainly urban emergent, right? Okay. Right. But where Sam is student teaching West Seneca, that's probably much more traditionally suburban, where we could make an argument that Maryvale is a first ring, maybe displaying urban characteristics, where West Seneca, I would say, is probably much more traditionally suburban. So just, again, some context for our listeners and a plug to your article that you wrote about earlier that we talked about in the previous podcast.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for adding that information. Much, much appreciated. Thank you. Yes. Do we have one more?
Yes. My name is Riley Lucarelli, and I'm a teacher candidate as well. I'm also at Maryvale Intermediate with Luke. So we actually work together a lot, see each other every day, which has definitely been a good experience. And I think we're both learning a lot from each other, which makes this whole experience even better. I was just going to say that I think student teaching has been going great. Kind of piggybacking off what Luke and Sam just said, I think the first week started off a little slower with, you know, the students getting in their daily routines with fire drills, lockdowns, stuff like that. But actually this week we've been tested, and Luke and I put together this very cool lesson about PBAS, which we have to go over bus safety all this week. So we put together these cool interactive lessons this week about bus safety, which has definitely been fun to make and think about, which is something I've never thought about in phys ed, bus safety, but it definitely challenged us to think of an activity we can do with that. And we actually get to test it out tomorrow and the rest of this week. So hopefully that goes well. And then we are actually getting into units that we're both coming up with fully. So definitely every day has been like challenging. We're learning a lot of new things and we're reflecting on how we do each day, but it's definitely escalated a lot and it's going in a good direction. So I'm excited to see what happens the rest of the weeks to come.
Thank you, Riley. Thank you. I heard something fascinating, and I have always believed that students play a crucial role with our organization. And imagine you just said that you had to think about a new lesson around busing, right? Like, I never thought of something like that. And in this new norm, as we would say, right, this new normal, wouldn't it be fascinating to have a workshop at some point about how did you adjust to shifting your thinking and shifting your approach to instructional practices? So that's something to think about, that we always seek reading research and applying it to practice. and of course, making it real, bringing it to life, right? So last podcast, Dr. Richards said something that was amazing with the being in the background when he talked about American Bandstand. Was it American Bandstand when he talked about, he actually got an opportunity to sort of like display the research in a different way so that the audience can appreciate what was actually done. So hearing you say this kind of triggered remind me of that conversation we had with him. Do you agree with that, Dr. Seymour?
Yes, exactly. The idea to be able to play off each other and think about different perspectives from different angles. Absolutely.
Oh, thank you so much. This was good. Appreciate it. To those of you who shared, I appreciate it. And I wish everyone continued success. And thank you again for sharing.
All right. So let's continue on with the discussion. And some of you have already started chatting a little bit about this already, but how are schools adjusting to current pandemic or COVID guidelines? And in particular, what are you doing in physical education to accommodate accordingly?
One big thing that I've seen in Maryvale Intermediate right now is that I have been really working on the last 2 weeks is when the students are in games and warm-ups, they have their masks on and, you know, they're going, they're getting their heart rates up. And I think really taking into account how they're moving and like they're getting tired a little bit quicker. We have to offer them those mask breaks, I think, more often. Luke and I have been making sure like during these games, we're really paying attention to how kids are feeling. A lot of the times when they get tired, they get a little more unsafe. They're falling on the floor, doing things that they shouldn't be really doing. So I think we've been offering mask breaks, which are 6 feet apart on their specified dot, a lot more throughout the class periods than we would have in a non-COVID year. So that's definitely something that we've adjusted and I've noticed a lot the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, can I add something to that? I was, you did say it, and I was trying to get it, especially for audiences, sort of visualize how you did the mask breaks. And you did say, what is the timeline for the mask break? Like, how long is that mask break? 3 minutes, 2 minutes, what?
Usually I would say it varies. I'd say probably 2 minutes, because usually in that mask break, we try to knock something else out. So like if we're playing a tag game, we're taking a mask break and then we're going to switch taggers or we're going to talk and reflect on how we did during that game, either what were the good parts or what do we still need to work on, stuff like that. So it usually probably lasts around 2 minutes, I would say.
That's awesome. So that means that you're maximizing the time by not only are they taking a break, but they're using the time wisely, per se, right? And that's
absolutely
right. Like it. I love that strategy.
Yeah, and I'll add to it. My name is Luke Paulus. So I'm in Brockport Central School District, which is obviously right in Brockport, right just south of the college. I am at Barclay Elementary, which is a second and third grade only building. But for us specifically, our guidelines haven't really changed much from last year. So unfortunately, we only have half of a gym. The other half is being used as a cafeteria currently to try to space out kids while they eat 6 feet apart. So when we're inside, the kids are not allowed to take mask breaks at all. And so our plan is to always go outside as much as possible. But with that, what we found is a lot of the second graders and some of the third graders are not in the, they're not in the like control level where we want them to be. A lot of the second graders specifically are in pre-control for most locomotor movements, as well as manipulative skills. So we ran a TGMD test the first week and we found that most cannot throw and catch, most cannot kick and dribble. So we're kind of starting from square one, but to do it all outside has been very challenging, especially with managing a second grade classroom, just because the kids are not used to being in school, having kindergarten cut half a year short, and then not being in school during first grade. So a lot of the first couple of weeks have been management and trying to get the kids outside, but it's been a real struggle at times just to have as many kids as we do in half of a gym space or to have as many kids outside, because we have a big area where we can go, but because all the other schools are also trying to get outside, so all the other elementary buildings on campus are, we only have a very limited space, which is right by a playground. So it's hard to deliver instruction while trying to talk over noise that may be behind us or anything else like that.
Yeah, and if I could kind of jump on that too, what we've noticed too with our third graders is The motor development is just not where it is or where it should be in like a given typical school year, just because all of last year they were in school a little bit, but most of it was online. So they're not getting that in person. They're not moving as much as they should. So they're not letting their bodies develop normally. So what Riley was saying about them falling on the ground when they get tired, they're just not used to being that active because they've been sedentary for so long that it, when we do give them breaks, we have to kind of break it down for them and be like, guys, listen, we know you want to play. We know you want to do this, but we need to take it slow so you guys are cognizant of what's going on and how your body's feeling, and that way you can protect yourself and others.
Kind of adding to that. So my name's Bram at Clarence High School right now, and we've experienced the same things Luke, Riley, and Sam. We're trying to stay outside as much as possible because with Erie County guidelines, we have to follow those and Clarence's, and we're allowed to have no masks on outside, but it's 3 feet apart inside. I've noticed from the regular classrooms, they've actually taken down like the plexiglass that used to surround all the desks. One thing in addition to that is they want groups, like when we're doing group activities, they want all of those names written down just in case of a positive case, which already has popped up. We've had several students test positive, and I'm coaching a nearby district, and both districts' guidelines are the same for like athletes with their sports. Coaches now have to assign seats on the bus, and they have to submit of like where everyone is sitting on the bus for guidelines. So that's super interesting. And then we just found out today we were planning on having a swimming unit later on, and we just found out that we should plan not to have a swimming unit now. So that's about where we're at, but a lot of similar situations. Sorry, my voice is cracking a little bit.
I'll piggyback off Brianna. My name's Alexis Miller, and I'm student teaching at Peru Intermediate School. That's 3rd through 5th. We are also going outside as much as possible. We've only been inside the gym one day because it rained. So we're trying to get the students outside because it's more normal, back to normalcy. But what we're finding is my class periods are only 40 minutes. So by the time teachers drop their students off, either they're sometimes they're late, they're early, and then it takes time to cross the street, get onto the field, and start warm-ups. We're finding we're having difficulties like maximizing our physical activity time. And just, you know, the first week back to school, the behavior management, that's been a big thing for us. We've had to stop our classes and go over the rules again just to make sure everyone's safe. Because if we can't be safe, we can't play and have fun. And that's the biggest thing. So even though the most important thing is maximizing the activity time, I think right now, like as everyone's saying, we have to be patient and we have to really work on the things that are going to help set us up for a successful year. And if we need to take the time now to do it, because if we don't do it now, then it'll be harder to have students go off that routine and all of that. And we're also noticing, like, we planned a unit, we're doing ultimate football right now. Some of the students' skill levels are not there. So we're having to take like two class periods to go over the same skills, just so that we feel confident that they know what they're doing and we're not just rushing through. Even if we had a 6-day unit plan, we're taking the time to teach it again the next day that they come into phys ed, so that we know that they have their skills down and we're taking the time to make sure that they get it. So I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, what's resonating with me as I'm hearing y'all speak is the fact that y'all are cognizant of safety in the midst of classroom management, in the midst of this pandemic. So it's just like cyclical, right? And I'm hearing, hey, I hear you. You want to have fun, but in order to be safe, we have to have some type of order here. We need to adhere to the classroom routines and procedures. And that's what I'm hearing. And that's appreciative. And I will urge you to continue to stay on track with that, because subsequently, when you are in full charge with your own classes as a teacher full time, these nuances that come into play where it impedes actual delivery of instruction. And we have no time to waste now that we're having these challenges, which is the next question. But I see totally you're cognizant about being cognizant about safety and intertwined with classroom management, which is very good to hear. And thank you for sharing, Alexis and Brianna. And thank you.
An interesting point to bring up, Dr. Ramsey, as well, that I forgot to from Sam's original conversation, but it really fits in nicely with some of the challenges that our teacher candidates are trying to navigate, is Sam, if you heard her, she talked about 80-minute classes in PE.
Yes, that is I wrote it down. Yes.
Yeah, props to West Seneca for using a block scheduling approach, which, you know, I'm not sure how much longer is going to last there. I I've heard rumors and whispers about some of that. And, you know, you would think that that occurs more often in school districts across the state, but that seems to be block scheduling seems to be a thing of the past. When we talk about some of the challenges that we face in physical education regarding COVID, certainly more time would help resolve some of those problems for sure.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. I did write it down. And as one of my notes here, because as you said, grades 9 to 12, and right next to it, I said 80 minutes. So interesting. Wow. You know, like time is of essence, you know,
absolutely,
clearly.
Absolutely. Yes.
It's so much, there's so much time in between, i.e., that's why I mentioned the word patience, because that's another layer of instruction we have to think to teach our students. Be patient with when things will be taking place, when is your turn, when we get a chance to engage in some type of physical activity and or activity per se. So we have to maximize the uses of our time strategically. And you alluded to that. Thank you again. Okay, so I would like to, many of you talked about your current successes, and I totally appreciate you sharing that. And clearly there are other challenges remaining that are ahead. And I, for one, foresee challenges, and just be prepared for challenges that could come at any given moment. And a couple, incidentally enough, today a teacher reached out to ask about our support with how to navigate the guidelines, and speaking to the previous question about the COVID guidelines, and then added something that was in the requirements, the NYC, or we call it NYC Fitness Gram, but it's a fitness gram as you know it, but it's licensed for New York City because we use a 15-meter PACER test. So the teacher was asking, what are the implications with this? Are we going to be mandated? Yes, it's still part of the requirement. However, information is forthcoming. It doesn't impede you from continuing to introduce the academic language associated with the assessments. It doesn't impede you from introducing the actually benefits of these assessments and so on and so forth. And then when the time is right, then you can easily implement these assessments. You can do some modification and keep it within the fitness cycle and just keep things, you know, embedded in your lessons. So those are little challenges that we're already dealing with. Teachers wanted to know, hey, am I still required to do X, Y, Z? So I'm asking you now, other than the current successes that you shared, are there any remaining ones ahead that you could think of that might impede and or present any type of obstacles for us as physical educators?
I'll try and start this conversation. I'm Kevin Fitzgerald. I am student teaching over at Global Concepts. It's a K-8 school. And I'm currently working with 4th through 8th grade. The one success that I think maybe almost every teacher is the students are back face-to-face. I think that this is a lot easier to make connections with the students, which is what the teachers want to do. It's a lot easier to make the connections with the students when you're face-to-face with them. So that brings me to the challenge of last year when we were on a video or a computer screen, it was a lot harder to get through to a student. You know, you didn't know what the student was doing. They were on their laptops doing whatever they were doing. So I think a success is that all the students are face-to-face, and it's a little bit easier for a current teacher to get through to that student and maybe point them in the right direction. Now, a remaining challenge, and I don't want to get ahead of discussion here, but goes to the article that we'll discuss in a little bit, is getting the students motivated to participate in class. Through the past year, like I said, students were at home in the comfort of their own house, opening up a laptop and just sitting there. I think we have to, they're not motivated to be outside and running around. They're not used to kicking a soccer ball. They're not used to catching a football. So I think we have to, as teachers, find a way to point these students in the right direction to get motivated to want to participate instead of being home on a laptop watching a class through a screen.
Yes, that's awesome. And thank you. That's fine that you jump ahead, because we are going to address the article. And clearly, I thought of things also as you were talking, Kevin. Thank you for sharing again. Things like boredom, you know, and that lack of that time gap that I was talking about earlier, that can stir up some boredom and, again, can impact student off-task behavior. And I don't want to just say misbehavior, because it doesn't necessarily have to be misbehavior. It could be just off-task behavior. And other things can trickle down or up either way, right? So things like boredom. So the solution is within this group to some degree, because I know I'm most likely will be hearing what is it that we could do to address that issue, that challenge that you say, that you mentioned there, Kevin, as we move forward. So we'll share it. We'll talk a bit about that as we discuss the article. Thank you for sharing. Anyone else, please?
I kind of think some of the challenges that we might face are still unknown. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen a month from now. We don't know what's going to happen in February. We don't know what's going to happen by the end of the year. There's so many things that with COVID that could happen. It could all of a sudden just kind of get better. The rates get better and we're essentially back to life as it was by the end of the school year, or we could get shut down again. So right. I think it's being able to be flexible and kind of be able to go with the flow, but at the same time, trying to have something in place. So regardless of what happens, we're still able to give the kids the instruction they need and be able to get through our lessons or our units. That way they can continue their growth.
Yeah. We probably would have never thought that we'll be here today talking about virtual learning and physical education. And to Kevin's point, you know, being face-to-face, present, hands-on, you know, things of that nature. The good thing about the virtual was that a lot of content knowledge was able to be shared with students, or at least delivered. A lot of content for especially students that we normally would be perhaps be not focused during class time. So that was somewhat of a good thing. But I couldn't agree with you more there, Mr. Luke Federici, that we don't know the uncertainties, right? And we never expected to be in this place today. And here we are today trying to adjust or adjusted. We readjusted to our new normal. And also looking forward to the future to see what else we could do differently and or better to in the event that something similar like this should occur, or something that could take us by surprise at any given moment, trying to keep at the same time the authenticity of what we're trying to do, is which is to teach the fundamentals or foundational skills to our students, in addition to, you know, all the social-emotional components of what we deliver in physical education. Thank you for sharing. Someone else? And we could slowly get into the article as we move forward. What do you think, Dr. C?
Yeah, sounds great, Dr. Ramsey. Now, my question to all of our teacher candidates, our student teachers, are what you mentioned that, and I think Luke is spot on. You know, it's hard to say what the challenges are, but what are you hearing from your mentor teachers and or school districts regarding plans should things go one direction or another? What are you hearing? What are school districts planning? What provisions are they putting in place to be ready for outcomes, whatever they may be?
Hi, everyone. It's Sam again. Something that Luke said that it made me remember a conversation I had with Mrs. Jones today. That's another one of our teachers at West Seneca East High School. She was actually telling me that the cases in Erie County for COVID are like higher than they have been. It's like, oh, I think she said over 200. I can't quite remember. However, it was honestly a shock to me just because you'd think that we're starting to go in the right direction, or it seems that we're going in the right direction. However, my mentor, Mr. Sebastian, was just letting me know that he was only going to have 10 of his athletes on the JV football team at practice because I think he said like 11 of them are sick. So the fact that literally over 50% of his JV team is sick. And when I say sick, I mean they are injured or they are sick and potentially testing positive with COVID. It is mind-blowing to me because I just personally would think, being at the high school level, these students would think, you know, this is a scary situation. I don't want to get sick. I don't want to go to the hospital. I want to be safe. But one of those challenges that we face is the fact that now all of these students are getting to be with their friends again. It's hard to keep them apart. And they want to, like I said before, I have students that want to keep their masks down. They want to share drinks. They want to share snacks. And I'm just kind of like, wow, as I've been observant these past 2 weeks, and I'm just like, are these students just like, are they not afraid? Or like, because I'm terrified of being sick. I have my son here, Bo. He's a little 2.5, or he's about to be 2.5. And for me, I don't want him to get sick. And so for these students that are just kind of nonchalant about everything, I'm just like, I'm very happy that they are being positive, but I'm scared that they don't necessarily know the ramifications of their actions, because it would break my heart if anybody got so sick that they had to go to the hospital. Because majority of us are vaccinated. So we're doing what we can to stay safe. But these students, we don't know if they're vaccinated or not. So it's a scary time. And I'll stop before my son shares too much information. That's nice.
He's probably contributing in his own language there.
I love it. I love it.
I love it. Yes, so do I. Yes. you kind of prompt another question there, or a little comment that I have, Dr. C, when you said, what are you hearing? Because when Luke spoke about the uncertainties, I thought about, well, you know, I would not be surprised, and this is a comment, that your cooperating teacher and yourself might seek you out for advice on some of these large groups type of events, i.e. Events or modifications that need to be made because of your involvement with larger group of students, i.e. in the physical education setting. So I thought about that our expertise may come into play in many schools when it comes to organization and grouping and things of that nature. So I know safety has always been, you know, paramount to our field, but in addition to that, this other layer of safety. So I just wanted to plug that in there because I thought it was important when you brought that up about what you're hearing, from the field. Anyone else, please?
I just want to bring up too, Dr. Ramsey, real quick. And I wrote it down and I wanted to just make sure that I was clear on this, but Luke brought up a tendency for pre-control outcomes versus control. Was that right?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot more second graders at the pre-control level than the
pre-control level. Okay, so and then Brianna, who's doing her student teaching at the high school level, is saying, you know, I'm starting to see the same thing. Now, obviously, we're not a pre-control, or the instrument that we're referring to is the GLSP. You know, we probably don't see that as often utilized at the high school levels to document performance, but it really kind of points to the connection between elementary and the vertical and horizontal articulated curriculum all the way throughout. And I wonder, you know, bigger questions, are we going to see delays in, physical development. And what I mean by physical development is not biological, but I'm referring to more from a performance standpoint in perhaps sports and athletics. Right. Are we going to see that? And Brianna kind of pointed to that. And I find that interesting. It's a whole nother podcast that we could get into, but
I see that as
you're going to see lower performance in school sports and athletics as a result.
Right. And I see that as a study that's down the line somewhere, because to make that comparison with, the range of students, I can foresee motor learning colleagues and kinesiology folks looking at these things, because it is going to be a task ahead of us because of that 1 year, to Luke's point again, delayed, i.e. they weren't there in person, and the authenticity of it virtually was not there either. So, wow. Anyone else, please? Before we jump in, I want to jump into the article and hear your thoughts about the article.
Yeah, if I can just comment on that real quick.
Sure, of course.
Seymour, I think we're already seeing it. I just think that lack of motor development is already there. And it's not like kids were able to, during their year off, if they could go play club hockey or club soccer or whatever the case may be, no one was able to do anything. So it's not like you could have kids go play all summer and they come into school, you do a soccer unit, and their skill levels where they should be. It's no one was doing anything. So I think that the discrepancy and just the abilities of students to learn how to kick a ball or throw a ball or whatever the case may be is, I think we're already seeing that.
Fascinating, Luke. You make a lot of good points.
Indeed. I agree.
Anyone else regarding?
I just wanted to add one challenge. This is Alexis again. Is we already have one full class that has been quarantined for last week, and now they're still out this whole week, and there's no virtual teaching for them. So I think that's really something that needs to be addressed, because when they come back into the classroom to PE, even, they're not going to be on the same page as where all our other students are, because they're not even getting like instruction for phys ed for after school or to complete on their own. So I think that's another challenge that our school Peru is facing.
Wow. Is Lexi, provision by your school, is that for all learning, or is that just PE that they're not?
It's for all learning. We got like an email saying that the students who are quarantined, they do have there's a 2 hour after school program that they're supposed to attend, but it doesn't involve PE.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking as you were talking, Alexis, that you're bringing up a challenge that it's reality, not only in phys ed, but you said that. So give in a hypothetical, you're teaching a lesson with a group of students for an entire week, and with a drop of a dime, they have to now be virtual. And then is there something in place? You said that's the challenge. There's nothing, and they're not getting
virtual. There's nothing in place.
Right. So as physical educators, I'm thinking to myself, like, we, again, in some, depending on the setting, the school and so on and so forth, should be prepared somehow. What am I going to do in the event that my students cannot be with me in person over a certain period of time? And if they go virtual, then what? So that's a great point that you brought up about challenges associated with. Then it varies by school, because the school would say, well, okay, we don't want anything virtual. Or it depends, right? We don't know. So that's an unforeseen challenge, as Luke F. said earlier. So just wanted to make a point of that. So anyone else before we jump in? I would like to jump into the article, because Kevin got us started, and I thought that he made a very good point. So since Kevin, since you started off with the article, you want to get us started with that? Thoughts about the article? And then we can have others chime in. Is that all right?
Yeah, for sure. Reading the article, again, the title was, "What is the New Normal in Physical Education Post-COVID-19? Reading it, I believe it was the second paragraph. The first question that they brought up was, what impact will COVID-19 have on student motivation?
Yeah.
The first week that we had students, we did some icebreakers, games, just getting the kids back into the routine of, you know, being in school. This week we started our, you know, overall lessons, and we're doing soccer, but it seems that these kids, these students, are not motivated to participate. And actually, a pretty cool thing that I did is I actually asked one of my students that question, you know, why aren't you motivated to participate in the class? And her response, and I quote, is, "It was easier to wake up in the morning knowing I didn't have to leave my house." So that was the answer of that student. And I sat back the next class and tried to think about it. And, you know, that student made a good point. I think they're still in the mindset of, I can just sit at home, not leave, and pretty much do the same thing. Another kid said that they were bored. And the reason that they're bored is because they had a whole year off of not doing physical activity. So I think as teachers, we have to try and find that sweet spot of how to bring those students back to the classroom, back to the gymnasium, back to the field out back, and get them motivated to want to be physically active. And personally, I think with more time, that'll start, you know, being in place. I think once students are in the classrooms, they understand that they're back in school, they'll start getting back into the rhythm of what they once knew.
Kevin, thank you. Thank you for that tip of motivation. You said, and I wrote it here, I had it here on my notes, teacher motivation equals student motivation. So you were on it, man. You're spot on. Go ahead. I would like to hear others, but go ahead, Dr. C.
I agree, Dr. Ramsey. I'm impressed. And I mean, Kevin's kind of been pointing to this problem from the beginning of the podcast today. Just what are we going to do to get K-12 students back motivated, keen, engaged in not only physical education, but for, it sounds to me, for that matter, in other disciplines within the K-12 sphere. And that, so it's a challenge, not only for physical education. I think the article speaks to that a little bit, and I'd like to hear what perhaps some of the other student teachers may think before I start to share some of my thoughts. But I think Kevin is on the cusp of, he mentioned that he believes that we can bring them back. And I think we can bring them back with some of the practices, some of the strategies that he's already employing right now with just what he conveyed so far. So anybody else want to share?
I think that the biggest thing with my group of students right now being second and third graders is that they get bored doing stations or other activities that they were doing online last year. So when we opened up with fitness testing, a lot of what they did at the beginning of last year was just like, I guess, like a lot of fitness units, because that's all that they could do with zero equipment. And now that we opened up with that again, you could tell right away that they were bored or sick and tired of it. And they just want to get back into games. They want to be able to run and compete with each other, or they want to be able to throw a ball and try to knock down a castle and castle ball. So it's clear that they want to play games, but the struggle that we're having now is trying to say, well, like, this is the standards and here's what you're lacking. And so how do we get from their ability not to throw to them being able to play games? Like, we can't just jump right into it. And I think that that's not a message that can be conveyed to second and third graders well. They just kind of want to do what they do. But unfortunately, like, we're not recess. We can't just let everybody run around and play games all day. There has to be some sort of structure to it. So it's about trying to find that balance between the structure in class and also giving them an atmosphere that they do find fun and enjoyable.
Interesting point. Some schools here in New York City, the initial focus of every discipline, every subject is, let's address the whole child first, i.e. social emotional well-being. Let's address this, everything else will fall in place. My humble opinion is that social emotional instruction that should be an ongoing conversation, and will be an ongoing conversation. But we are in the world of the physical literate person. So we need to do more than just the social emotional. So how do we balance, to your point, find the medium for that? So that's the question that I ask when I think about only focusing on social emotional, and how do we then at the other areas that we are responsible for delivering. Anyone else share?
Yeah, so in the article, it really talks about the gamification of content, which, because kids are so used to just hopping on video games all day, that's just what they're used to. So when we were virtual last year, to get the kids up and moving, we kind of did like a would you rather. So our venture teachers put up, it's simple questions like, would you rather have an apple? Would you rather have a banana? And each choice had a different exercise correlated to it. And the students would do the exercise of what? So if they wanted an apple, they would do jumping jacks. If they wanted the banana, they would do ski hops, something like that. So in the article, it talks about kind of giving out badges or tokens or something like that. So Riley kind of alluded to it earlier with this bus safety thing. We're kind of incorporating that into our lessons we're doing this week, which we're taking the content of the bus safety and we're using that would you rather setup. So like, for example, one question is, when you're on the bus, do you, like, my voice volume is what? And it's either yelling or quiet. And if the kids are yelling, they do like, I don't know, we'll call it curl ups. And then if they're quiet, they're doing hopscotch jumps. And then at the end, we tell them, if you get it right, kind of give yourself a point just to kind of get that motivation going to see how many points they get, even though the points don't matter. It's just something for them to kind of work towards and kind of keep them motivated to keep them in, keep them cognizant and ready to go and to get through the lesson.
Kind of going off that, what Luke just said, in the article, it also mentions student choice. And we also chose to do this activity because the students have a choice to make. They have to read the question on the screen while we also are verbalizing it to them. And they choose what they think is the right answer. And it's also two different exercises. We have tried to use choice with a lot of our warm-up games and other things with exercises. But we try to use student choice to get a bunch of different exercises involved. We have throughout the Would You Rather slideshow, we tried to hit every domain. So the questions asked are cognitive and there's affective questions asked in there about bus safety and your bus procedures and how you personally feel on the bus. And if you follow direction on the bus and do you feel safe on the bus? So we kind of had to hit those points, and the psychomotor side obviously being the exercises they're doing throughout the whole lesson. So that kind of goes with the article talking about student choice.
Yeah, thank you both, Luke and Riley. I think when Luke brought up gamification of content, it made me think about the fact that many teachers who were afraid of the technology per se, had to sort of like reprogram themselves to learn sometimes even fundamental things associated with technology. One of the parts in the article that stuck out to me, and I was just shocked when I saw it, but then again, I thought about there's benefits to some degree. When it says, during this time, video game users has skyrocketed as youth are spending almost 2 hours each day immersed in console, mobile, or computer gameplay. Though many may see this as a negative, physical educators can integrate this affinity by gamifying content. So I can see where there's benefits of i.e. gamification and computer usage and or technology, as we always done somewhat, right, in physical education, yes, to integrate in learning. So there is some benefits there. So I thought about that, that it has got a bit more robust, and I believe that teachers have gotten more attuned with the importance of technology and how this could be, again, moving forward, something to consider should there be another wave of challenge of some sort. And when you brought up autonomy, Luke, I believe Luke and Riley both shared about students selecting something of their own. That in itself can serve as a motivator for students. So I thought about that as well as you were sharing with the audience. Someone else, anything about this article? I mean, there's a lot to unpack, but there was some great stuff. Anyone else?
Yes, it's Sam again. So Luke and Riley were talking about, which I love that you guys are utilizing that like in your bus lesson. I just think that's awesome. But the gamification. So the video game industry is a $1 billion business, and literally so many kids love playing video games. My husband is one of them. I get to watch him play games like Rocket League, Call of Duty with his buddies. And honestly, like reading the article, I was like, you know what? This makes perfect sense, because you have to utilize the things that this article talks about. So working in teams, you have the leaderboards that shows your point system. So like, okay, Rocket League, for example, you could be a grand champion, which is just, you're really good at the game, essentially. And it's awesome to me that you can take something like video games and apply it to phys ed for students to, for one, it'll get them motivated and excited again. Because who would have thought that you could think of something like that and turn it into something that you can use in the gym, on the field, whatever your lesson may be for phys ed. And I loved the idea about how, so there's lots of little examples in the article. They talk about maybe you're in a striking unit, which reminds me of a video we watched in our elementary movement and activities class. There is a phys ed guy on YouTube who does an amazing striking unit. And what he does is he has multiple types of instruments for striking. So like a pool noodle, a paddle ball, like you would use in pickleball or in table tennis. And then you have balloons and you have beach balls and you have little foam balls or whatever. And the point is for students to be able to have the choice and what striking implement they would like to use. So maybe they want to use a pool noodle. Maybe they want to use a balloon for their ball, and they have the opportunity to try to strike the balloon with the pool noodle. So for one, you're giving the student, like you said, you're giving them autonomy. They're able to have this confidence that develops from their creativity. And they're also still learning how to strike, how to hit. And there was other examples, like with a volleyball unit, where you're able to track your points. So like a point system. And then the point with the teams is, they brought up in the article how there are always going to be students who are not necessarily superstars. So by having a team, you more so have an average of points putting you on the leaderboard. So you don't just have all the superstars at volleyball at the top, and you have students who are not necessarily as good at those skills at the bottom. That way it's more of a level playing field, and students get to work together and they get to make decisions together. And there's even lesson plan that I thought about. If I were to teach if I was to teach an elementary phys ed class, you could do orienteering in your class, and you could have a bunch of groups work together, and they have to utilize a map to go to different stations, and they're doing different exercises. And the whole point is by the end, they've collected all these clues and they have to decode a word, like this code word. So there again, that's more like a, you could say like a treasure hunt, obviously like orienteering, but still you can do things like that. And they still reflect this gamification type strategy where students are doing something out of the box. And it's not just, okay, we're going to learn how to bump and set a volleyball today. We're actually going to make this into a game, or we're going to work together. And you guys can use guided discovery and inclusion and your own choice and in order to learn and play and have fun and just like work together. Clearly, I really enjoyed the article.
That's great. No, thank you. That's what we want. Riley and Luke F, you are pretty much addressing or doing what the article talks about, the integration of indirect styles, right? By you having students do this. So it says One approach is to employ an indirect teaching style, self-check, inclusion, guided discovery. So students are identifying areas that they would like to work on and, of course, reward themselves. So you pretty much are doing this. If anyone has not get a chance to see the work of Muska Mostyn, am I saying that right there, Doc?
You got it. You got Mostyn and Ashworth.
Mostyn, that's right. Their work is unbelievable. So if you get a chance to look at teaching styles, again, to add to your repertoire, I encourage you to do so.
A couple of things to add to that, Dr. Ramsey, well said. And again, I think our student teachers, kudos to all of them, have the market cornered when it comes to this topic. I think the article speaks to really what Kevin challenged all of us to consider. And Kevin, I mean, if you recall, his original obstacle was motivation. What are we going to do here, folks? These kids are, you know, they're in a bad spot and we need to get them back. And the article talks about what? Making connections. That's what it ultimately talks about. It talks about, as teachers, we have to make connections. If it's gamification, what are we doing? We're speaking to our students in a language that they understand and enjoy in order to make connections, to engage them in learning experience. If we utilize different teaching styles that are more indirect, non-confrontational, we are trying to meet them at their level, right? That's what it comes down to. What else did Kevin do? He asked. We talked about autonomy today. What did Kevin mention? He mentioned, I'm stumped. So why don't I just ask my students? And so many times as teachers, we have these barriers and we have these boundaries up, thinking we have to solve all of these very difficult challenges. But yet, sometimes you just have to ask. And I think when I said that Kevin is on the cusp, I sincerely mean it. He's on the cusp because he said, okay, the first thing I'm going to do is I want to connect. So I've got to ask what is going on and how can I bridge the gap? How can I take the next step forward? And I applaud him for that. And I applaud all of you for the very same thing. But ultimately what this article speaks to, whether there's a pandemic or not, is we have to make connections and we have to meet students at their level. That's what I have to add, Dr. Ransom.
Yeah, I went straight to the source. How can I help you, right? And at time we plan sometimes just in a teacher-centered manner rather than student-centered, and including students, in fact, can reduce even off-task behaviors or help with classroom management if you engage them. Absolutely.
If you well said, like Kevin has started with, if you give the students autonomy, ownership, they will go to the next level. And so I applaud him. He's already on the right track to solving the problem. Now, he's still got some issues to resolve. We all do. And continue to persevere. Yes. But sometimes you just have to simply start with asking. And so I applaud Kevin for that.
One of the things that I thought about also, Dr. C, when you talked about building relationships. And I'm sure many of you here saw this happen during the initial stages of the pandemic when students were learning virtually. Parental involvement, parents getting engaged or wanting to be part of that. I want to do this. Oh, I learned about this new exercise my child is doing in school. And we have gotten those feedback from parents that I really appreciate. I see now why physical activity is good for my child. And now I'm part of this process. So that in itself is another great motivator whereby that home and school connection, to speak to your point, Dr. C, about the building relationships, building rapport, that community building aspect of physical education and the school and home. So that is something that we saw here in New York City, that parents were on screen with their kids doing movement, you know, and that was from Absolutely. The young to the old. Yeah.
Building connections, like Dr. Ramsey just alluded to, does not just mean asking the students themselves, asking the parents, asking other teachers, asking the coaches, all of the different people that these students confide in, that have relationships with. How can I make a connection? So props to Dr. Ramsey, exactly right.
Yeah, Yeah, and by the way, seek and but please exchange ideas and seek ideas, ask colleagues, ask friends, ask me. You know, I would just, before we got started, Kevin, I asked Kevin, and I'm sure everybody have heard of course, Open Phys Ed. I'm sure you saw those lessons. I happen to be one of national trainers for that, which I thought is fascinating. And Hip Hop for Public Health as well, another great resource. And there are many resources that are free. And I encourage you to do that as well, to reach out to colleagues. Hey, what's working for you? How do you connect with your students? And what can I do to make my environment better or increase participation or student motivation in my setting? So reach out, get the resources. They're out there. Exchange.
Excellent. Well, I think we're getting close to time here. Anything else from our teacher candidates, our student teachers? It's been a wonderful episode thus far. Anything you want to add as we wrap up today's show?
I would like to hear at least a takeaway from each one of you as we move forward. If you think about challenges and hope for a better future. Anything that can come to mind, any takeaway and any message, encouragement, anything would be great. If you can't think of other things, that is so.
I would say a takeaway is to just really listen to our students and not go off the script, off our lesson plan. Like if we need to take the time to help our students, like we should do that. I think the learning is important too, but making sure that they're okay is also very important. So,
well said, Lexi, particularly at this time, right? Children before content, or Maslow before Bloom, all these different analogies you hear. And I think that really does speak to that for sure. Okay, well, like I said, a great episode. I'm proud of all of you. Wonderful job. Thank you for your insight. I would be remiss if I did not mention, I alluded to the article. Kevin also brought it up. What is the new normal in physical education post COVID-19? And we talked about again today how this article speaks to not only the pandemic, but what we should consider doing all the time in the profession, right? But nevertheless, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the article's authors. And the article's authors are Zachary Wall, Alexander, and Amanda McMurray. So to both of you out there, thank you for providing this valuable, useful resource for my student teachers, our student teachers, our future professionals in the profession.
Ditto, and current professionals. Thank you.
Yes,
ditto.
Yes.
Yeah, this article was used in one of our online physical education workshops. We have a online PLC, professional learning community, rather.
Oh, okay. Yeah, PLC.
We used it, and it was a great discussion piece here that brought about a lot of good ideas and suggestions as well.
Great. Well, on behalf of New York State AFERD, Dr. Ramsey, and all of our members, we would like to thank the teacher candidates from Canisius College for joining us this evening to share their thoughts and perspectives. This session will be posted on the New York State AFERD website as the 9th episode on our podcast channel. Stay tuned for more sessions with student teachers this fall, alongside other exciting episodes in the near future.
Please visit us at newyorkstateafert.org, social media handles at New York State AFERD, or call us at 315-823-1015 for more information. And please mark your calendars for our return to the Turning Stone, November 18th through the 21st, 2021.
Thanks, everyone.